Even with vaccines, pneumonia remains a burden in the modern world. My guest today is Dr. Richard Wonderink. He's a pulmonologist with Northwestern Medical Group. Dr. Wonderink, tell us about the current state of pneumonia today. What's the prevalence and the global and economic impact? And what's different about what we know about this disease?
So there's a variety of important aspects that a lot of people don't know about pneumonia. Pneumonia is the second most common cause for admission to the hospital, depending on whose data you read, either behind heart failure or behind a normal delivery. Around the world, it is the number one infectious cause of death. In the U.S., it's also the number one cause of infectious deaths. If you look at all deaths from infection, 75% of them are caused by pneumonia. It's something that pneumonia is a more generic term. There's multiple different kinds of bugs that cause pneumonia. And in reference to what you were discussing about immunization, there's really two main types of immunization for pneumonia. One is for influenza, something that many of us are very familiar with after the pandemic in 2009-2010. And the other is a bacterial pneumonia called the pneumococcus. And so pneumococcal vaccine is the other form of prevention. Those are only two types of causes of pneumonia. They're the by far the most common, with influenza the most common viral and pneumococcus the most common bacterial, but they don't cover all pneumonias.
So I was going to ask you about different types, and wow, the prevalence is really amazing. And as you say, I think people might not realize how prevalent it truly is around the world. Who is most at risk? Is it only people with immunocompromised situations, or are more people than that at risk for this?
So basically, everybody's at risk for pneumonia. The risk of death from pneumonia is kind of peaks at two points, early in life, and then later in life as you get older. We've made some significant improvements, particularly on the pediatric side with the immunizations and also care there, but it still is a serious cause of hospitalization for sure and death. In kids, also pneumonia is the second most common cause of hospitalization after asthma. So very prevalent in children, kind of tails off as you get into the teenage years, and then starts to become much more prevalent. The patients who are immunocompromised are not only at increased risk, but they're at risk for some less common bugs that might cause the pneumonia. And so that's part of our concern about the immunocompromised patients. Things that most of us would tolerate, they do much worse with. Things that we could fight off, they cannot fight off as easily. So they're at increased risk and have some unusual pathogens at times.
Other than flu, what are some of those? What are some of the more common methods of contracting pneumonia, and where are people getting it?
So some of the pneumonias are, especially viral pneumonias, are spread person to person. And so that's why immunizing a group of people tends to prevent pneumonia even in those that are not vaccinated. It is, for a lot of viruses, it is spread by what we call aerosols. So the viruses are actually in the exhaled breath and therefore can be inhaled by someone else. That's part of the reason why a lot of viruses spread within families and people in close proximity to each other. Some of the other types of bacteria we can reside in our nose or the back of our throat. And then when we get a virus, they kind of tend to proliferate, maybe aspirated, so a little bit more of a liquid inspired rather than just in the air, and that causes pneumonia. That may be a more important issue for the elderly patients, and why they have a little bit more of a risk of pneumonia is that there is a tendency to have this very small volume aspiration. In the elderly, this is much more common.
What are some of the red flag symptoms, and how is clinical diagnosis made?
So by far the most common symptoms are either going to be signs of infection. So the classic one is having a fever, chills, sweats at home. And the other important thing is something that points to the lungs, the respiratory system. So feeling short of breath, having some chest tightness or discomfort, and then probably even more important, starting to have a cough when you don't normally cough, and starting to have production of some sputum when you actually do cough. And those are kind of the cardinal symptoms that we're looking for. In the elderly, it may be as simple as just more confused, more lethargic than normal, and not necessarily even mounting a real high fever with it. Once you come to the hospital or to a physician's office, probably the biggest test that we need for pneumonia is to get a chest x-ray. So we're looking for changes on that to suggest that there's actually an infection in the lung. We can detect it sometimes in outpatient areas with an ultrasound if people have ultrasounds in their office, but the typical is a chest x-ray.
What are some of the latest treatments and clinical recommendations for practice with pneumonia patients? Are antibiotics always the first course of treatment?
So a big part of what we try to do is separate the severe bacterial infections from the viral infections. So we have treatment for the viruses, particularly influenza. We have some very old antibiotic or antivirals that are not that great. Then a medication many of us know as Tamiflu, or oseltamivir is the scientific name for it. And that's been kind of the standard treatment. There's a new treatment just released this year that is a effective antiviral for influenza that works slightly differently than the Tamiflu does. So we have some treatment there. The usual way we make that diagnosis is to get a swab from the nose, and then we can look for the DNA from the viruses on that swab. Is the most common test that we use. In the middle of an influenza season, when it's really common and the patient has the kind of classic symptoms, so influenza has not only a high fever, but also headaches and fevers, a lot of times we'll just start treatment based on those symptoms with the Tamiflu. For bacterial pneumonia, it's a little bit more difficult. If the patient's severely ill, we will get blood cultures to try and grow it that way. We can try and get some of those the secretions that are being coughed up to culture. And then if they're bad enough to get on a breathing machine, then we can actually get a sample from deep in the lung through a variety of methods. And we're starting to have more and more tests that are available on these specimens that allow us to diagnose some of the bacterial infections looking for DNA also. And so that's one of the really new things that's starting to come out in the literature and being used clinically as well.
Doctor, are there some adjuvant treatments that you might try, especially in the elderly, such as corticosteroids? What trials are going on that can help with a severe case of pneumonia?
Yeah, so the severe cases and the ones that are causing death continue to be a real challenge for us. So I kind of skip by. There's a variety of antibiotics, many of which are very effective for treatment of pneumonia. Some are oriented more to what we call usual bacteria. So this pneumococcus, this most common one, and a variety of other ones that are in the kind of streptococcus group. We sometimes see Staph aureus and rarely see the kind of Staph aureus that's resistant to methicillin. So what many lay people may have heard of as MRSA. And that can cause pneumonia even in people who have not been in the hospital. And that would require a different kind of treatment. Patients who have lots of underlying diseases, who have gotten lots of antibiotics recently, whether for respiratory infections or for urinary tract infections or whatever, are prone to having some more resistant pathogens. So we have antibiotics. That's why we're trying to sort through these diagnostics to try and sculpture the antibiotics to exactly what we think what the bacteria is. Despite all of that, though, and part of the disturbing thing about pneumonia is even when you get the antibiotics right, patients sometimes still die. And so we are trying to look and understand how to improve outcomes there. Steroids have been tried in the past. There are a variety of studies that suggest that you can shorten the duration of symptoms. One of the things that we see not uncommonly is that pneumonia can cause a worsening of things like asthma or COPD. And in that setting where the underlying disease is worse, we've been using steroids for a long time. So we're pretty comfortable that steroids don't necessarily make things worse, especially the short courses that we use for asthma. And so we're willing to do that. The real debatable thing is when you have some of these really severe cases, sometimes steroids are of benefit. Sometimes they make things worse. So more recent evidence from, say, influenza, or if you remember back to the SARS epidemic, that was a type of pneumonia and had a lot of problems in China, Vietnam, and in Canada. There, the data in retrospect suggests that giving steroids may have made them worse. So we're a little bit more comfortable with steroids if they have underlying disease. We're less comfortable if we know they've got a viral pneumonia. But there's still probably a role in some people. It's just trying to sort out where that is. And there are some ongoing studies trying to elucidate exactly what population might benefit from that. And there's a variety of other research things that are being tried specifically in this group that has severe pneumonia. We think we've got the right antibiotics, and yet they're not getting better. And those are, none has specifically made it to the market yet, but we are continuing to do those kinds of trials.
As we wrap up, Dr. Wonderink, tell us about the latest information on vaccines, immunization schedules, and what you want other providers to know about pneumonia and if they should see it in their practice and when it's important to refer to the specialists at Northwestern Medicine.
Yeah, so I think that the critical things are recognizing the severity. I think starting to recognize some of the adverse events associated with it. Some of the research is suggesting is that it may make your heart disease worse. And so being particularly careful about managing underlying heart disease, particularly coronary artery disease, cerebrovascular disease, so not stopping the aspirin and statins that we use for those things. And then getting them on the right antibiotics early to prevent the complications. And what we're actually finding is that the right antibiotics are usually the ones that are specific for community-acquired pneumonia, not so much the ones that we use for pneumonia that occurs in the hospital. And then we've got a bunch of tools and research that's going on here at Northwestern, including for the very severe cases, the use of extracorporeal membrane oxygenation. So basically putting patients on a bypass machine to get them through the acute severe episode of pneumonia and support them until they recover from the infection.
That's so interesting. Thank you so much, Dr. Wonderink, for coming on today and explaining what's going on in the world, as well as some of the latest treatments and thoughts for pneumonia. Thank you again for joining us. This is Northwestern Medicine Pod Talk. For more information on the latest advances in medicine, please visit nm.org. That's nm.org. This is Melanie Cole. Thanks so much for tuning in.